the way, I have to tell you, I tried to find the file on this.
Yeah.
And because it happened back in the 80s, I don't have it anymore.
Okay. So today's date is Friday, March 29th. My name is Andy Rasta, and I'm interviewing Mr. Dennis Lieberman. So could you start by telling me where you were born?
South Bend, Indiana.
All right. And what were your parents' names?
David and Olive, although she liked being called Mitzi and probably would, if she were alive today, would get upset if I called her Olive, but that was her name.
And did you have any brothers or sisters?
I still do. My older sister passed away last July. I have an older brother and a younger brother.
And what's your earliest memory?
My earliest memory? Man, I didn't expect that. You mean since I was born, my earliest memory?
Yeah, we're just going to try and get some background before we jump into the arcade.
Probably getting in a fight with my older brother over something, yeah.
Now, growing up, what are some of your best memories?
This is going to be on public radio.
Yeah, I think so at some point. I'm not entirely sure about that.
Certainly marrying my wife, having my kids. But I have a lot of really good memories. I mean, I had a lot of really good friends. Our law school friends were some of the best friends I've ever had. And we still get together every year for a party. We just had one a couple weeks ago. And we've been doing it since our second year in law school. Every year we get together and we just catch up and it was a little bit like when you go to boot camp when you get drafted. That's what law school's like. So you become very close to the people around you. And I think those have been some of my best memories.
So obviously Judge Garris mentioned that you guys went to UD's law school. Was that the first time you came down to Dayton, or had you been living here at some point previous?
Actually, no, I never lived here, but I went to Miami University, and I was on my way to a football game in Bowling Green, and I'm riding on the team bus, and I'm looking out the window. And we go past Dayton, and this is back when, you know, it was smoggy, and it, frankly, it was pretty ugly at the time. And I said, man, I'm never going to live in a place like that. And here I am. So my first experience with it was that. And then after I graduated from Miami, I went to law school here and found out what a great place it is.
So what's your, relating to maybe law school, what was your earliest experience at the arcade? Did you come down here in law school that often?
No, not really. I don't recall coming to the arcade that often when I was in law school. Most of the time we just stayed around the school. We would, if we had parties, it'd be at our houses or our apartments. Spent a lot of time at the law school, just an awful lot of time, either in the library or taking a break in the break room and just talking. So I don't really recall coming down the arcade that much during law school. I really don't.
Right. So then after you were barred and you kind of started living down here.
We like to call it past the bar. And if you're barred, that means you can't go somewhere.
Fair enough.
Yeah. After we passed the bar, I remember we would, as young lawyers, we would get together afterwards and we'd go to the Oregon District, or we would go to the arcade, or there was another bar right by where the courthouse is. And do you remember the name of that bar?
King's Table.
And you wouldn't dare do this now, but back then, after you tried a case and you were waiting for the jury, you know, to make a decision, the prosecutors, the defense lawyer, even the judges we'd all walk a block over to the King's Table and we'd have a drink and, you know, talk about what was happening, and then you'd get a buzz and the jury came back, and a buzz meaning a buzz from the phone, not in your head. And so you would then go back to the courtroom and get the verdict. And we used to spend a lot of time there, and then we'd spend a lot of time in the arcade. And because we were younger at the time, we'd spend a lot of time at Newcomb's and at some of the bars down in the Oregon District.
So what are some of your memories of the arcade at that time, whether that be stores, whether that be your experiences at the arcade, just anything like that?
Well, there were always stores. There was probably one of the best haddock fish sandwiches I've ever had at the fish place that the judge was talking about earlier. And then always at the holidays, in law school you have what's called mock trial and moot court, and I had a partner who was just brilliant, and so we did okay in mock trial and moot court, and we stayed friends afterwards, and I became friends with his brother, and so we would all meet at the arcade usually day before Christmas, and we would have lunch there, have a number of drinks there, and then we'd go shopping at Elder Beerman and at Reich's for our Christmas presents, which, you know, we should have been doing like months earlier. And so, are you sure my wife's not going to hear this? Okay. So, you know, we would do all that, and we just had a great time. I mean, the arcade, Charlie's Crab in particular, was just a wonderful place to meet. Had good food, and we just had a really good time there.
So then was, because of all the holiday talk, was Christmas a very popular time for the arcade, for people to go to the arcade, visit, just not only because of its maybe place as a shopping center, but also as kind of a social interaction time?
Yeah. It wasn't just the arcade. It was the environment downtown during the holidays. You know, you had the Christmas tree lighting, which we still have.
Yeah.
You had the arcade where people would go and meet for lunch and go shopping. We had Elder Beerman and Reich's, which I don't know whether you're familiar with those. Those were department stores. And they were downtown, and you could go from one to the other and go shopping. There was shoe places where you could shop. There was a luggage place where you could shop. There were all sorts of places where you could go. And holidays were, I think, really big in downtown Dayton at the time.
And then the judge already mentioned the arcade closing once. Did you notice any particular problems that the arcade had, maybe that would have led to its closing the first time before it reopened?
Well, you know, I think he, from what I heard him say, I think that he probably explained most of the issues that happened. Being a young lawyer, my focus wasn't really on the economics of the arcade and what was happening. I know, if my recollection serves me correctly, and it may not, but if it does, I think there were some issues with tenants, like what the judge was telling you earlier, where they were withholding payment of rent, and because some of the things that need to be fixed weren't being fixed, and it became very expensive to fix some of the infrastructure at the arcade, and so you started to see it go downhill. People started moving out of the arcade, and I think when Charlie's Crab left, it kind of just went downhill from there.
All right, so before we talk about the closure of the arcade, I think you have a story to tell me about one particular time at the arcade.
Well, I think it's a story that Judge Garris would like me to tell you. When we were young lawyers, we we were in an office called the Cooper Building,
okay,
which no longer exists. But it was on the corner of 2nd and Main, right? And so I had just left a big law firm, Smith & Schnacki, which was located in the Mead Building. And, you know, Dan had just came over from working for the State of Ohio Attorney General's office. And so our dream was to start our own firm out of law school. So we did. And we moved into the Cooper Building. We were on the second floor. And we didn't have much business, but we had fun. And, you know, we would go down to a bar during lunch. Wouldn't drink, but we'd play Pac-Man. And, you know, we'd just had fun. We had a great time. Well, one of the tenants in the Cooper Building was an attorney. And he had a brother who was not an attorney, and I guess you could refer to him as being homeless at the time, where he would basically go from place to place to spend the night, a lot like some of the same problems we have today. And he enjoyed going into the arcade, and he wasn't quite the clientele that the arcade wanted, and so they arrested him, made him leave for trespass. And so his brother, who was the attorney in our office, came down and asked if I would work on his case, and so I became involved in his case and realized that they couldn't really trespass him out of the arcade because of how the arcade was structured, and that this was public. It was like walking down the street. You couldn't just trespass somebody walking down the street. And so, make a very long story short, and it is a long story because this was one of the more interesting clients I had over the years, at least the number of occasions I had to talk to him and to his brother. But make a long story short, we settled the case. And I think they ended up even, if I recall correctly, they ended up changing the structure of the arcade so that they could then trespass people out, if I recall correctly. Is there...
Yeah, I think what Dennis is getting at, he's being much too shy about this. It was our understanding was that the arcade, the rotunda, simply covered a public sidewalk, and so if you look at the rotunda, it is the rotunda, and then it's the lead up from 3rd Street to the rotunda, and it was also from the side, Ludlow, to the rotunda. And those at the time, I believe, Dennis, were public sidewalks.
Yes.
That the rotunda had just simply been put over. So it would be like going to any public street and putting an enclosure over it. That still is a public sidewalk. And that's where we get into all those different buildings. This was the sidewalk between all those different buildings. And so since it was just covering public sidewalks, they couldn't trespass this guy. And when Dennis got on the case, he's being much too shy about his legal ability here, because Dennis figured that out. Nobody else had figured that out. He figured that out and came, you know, and realized, no, you can't make people not come let people into a public space. You know, it's freedom of association, it's right of free passage, it's public property. You can't trespass somebody from private or from public property. And the result of it was there was a cash settlement for his client, but I think the bigger part of it was, and I could be wrong on this, but I think I'm right, was that caused the city to vacate the sidewalks.
Yep.
And once they vacated the sidewalks, it became part of private property, and then that gave whoever was running the arcade the ability to criminally trespass people out.
Right.
And then, you know, that causes a whole bunch of different issues, because then you can start targeting certain groups of individuals, whether they're young people or whether they're African American or whether they're the homeless. And that's just, you know, that can just cascade into a number of problems. And it kind of did. There can be good management at a place, and there can be bad management at a place. And I think the arcade suffered from bad management once they did get the authority to criminally trespass people out. So, you know, it was one of those things where the right thing was done, was protecting this gentleman's right to be there. And then it kind of resulted in an unintended consequence of giving people maybe some power over people that they really did not fairly exercise. I think that's a fair statement.
I think that's a fair statement. One of the things that sticks out in my mind now, what, 40 years later, however long it is, is that this guy, my client, made more money off of his settlement than I did my entire year practicing law. So it was, and it wasn't that much of a settlement. I mean, it was, but these were back, you know, when $20,000 was a lot of money. But
it was probably 82 or 83.
Yeah.
Because it was before we merged.
Right.
We merged in 84.
It was before we merged, yeah. And it was, I can honestly tell you he was a difficult client, and I can understand why they may not have wanted him to be in that location, but that's not what America is, you know. Just because somebody's difficult, somebody's different color, different religion, it doesn't give you the right to keep them away from where they have a right to be. And so that is, that was one of our first cases together, and it was an interesting one. Change the arcade.
Change the arcade, yeah.
Yep. Who knows? I may have been responsible for putting them under. I don't think so.
No, they wanted that ability to keep people out.
They did. They did want that ability.
You know, that gave them the ability to keep people out.
Yeah, it did.
Which maybe they didn't handle right.
Right.
When it came to keeping people out.
But they could use that $25,000 to fix the leaks in the roof.
Yeah, they could have.
Yeah.
So then, after that, what are some of your memories of the arcade before it closed its doors in 91?
Well, you know, and I keep going back to some of my fondest memories was when, I'd meet guys and women that I went to law school with there. And, you know, we'd have lunch, we would meet, we would talk, and we would just spend a lot of time there just catching up. It was, to me, the arcade was a social event. It was a social area. Did a little bit of shopping there, but some of it was over our price range at that time as young lawyers. But it was just a wonderful place, and it was beautiful. I mean, it's rare that you find a structure, an architectural structure, that was as cool as that really was. I mean, you could go up and you could walk around where some of the offices were located. People had some offices in there, and it was just beautiful. And I just wish it had been kept up the way it should have been.
And Do you think, like, there are any specific reasons that the arcade closed its doors? I mean, obviously the judge said keeping people safe was something that the arcade never really could make people feel. They could never really make people feel safe downtown. But do you think there are any other reasons?
You know, I do want to make a comment on that, because I think he's absolutely right And what's sad about the whole thing is that over the years I have learned that perception is mightier than the truth. And the truth is that Dayton, downtown Dayton, statistically, is one of the safer places in Montgomery County. And you know, there are those cases that get a lot of media attention. If you recall the Christmas killings, which you may not have, that's probably before your time. They used to, though I had a client involved in that, they used to be, they used to gather downtown and then they would, you know, get rides and move elsewhere. There used to be bus stops where there were bus transfers where kids would congregate. All that said, that was perception. It's sort of like you see a kid walking down the street today and you see somebody my age or older and they're going to look at him, and if that kid has his pants wearing halfway down his butt, then they're going to think that, you know, they're not safe. And you know, he could be a priest. I mean, you just don't know who this person is, because we're too easily persuaded by perception instead of truth, and we don't want to find out what the truth is. And I think that's what I think that's one of the things that killed the arcade. I think it's one of the things that hurts downtown, is that there's that perception. I mean, my office is on the corner of 4th and Main, and you know, I'm right across from the Breibold Building, which is where the probation office is. I have had no trouble in the entire time I've been there, and yet people perceive it as a problem. I had a client come to my office once many years ago, and he was a white collar crime criminal, accused of a white collar crime. And he's from Columbus, and he comes to my office and he says, "Boy, you live in an awful area." You have an office in an awful area. And I looked around and I thought, you know, it's really not all that bad. You know, it's the arcades right next door. I mean, but there were broken windows and there were things, and people make a perception based upon what they see, that they're afraid of things they don't know, and they're afraid that because there's broken windows, that means there's crime nearby. Or if somebody's walking down the street with the pants halfway down their butt, that means they're bad people. Back in my day, it was if your hair was long. You know, you used to be called hippies, and maybe we were, but you used to be called all sorts of names, and people were afraid of you. If you're walking down the street and you had older people walking towards you, they would go over to the other side of the street, so they wouldn't go by you. That hasn't changed. You know, it's just a different fear, but it hasn't changed. And fear drives what people do. It drives them in politics. It drives them in where they go to shop, where they go to eat. Fear drives them more than any other thing in the world. And so I think the judge is absolutely right. It's a perception that has hurt the arcade more than the reality.
And do you think that maybe the efforts of the city to reopen the arcade, do you think that maybe they'll recognize that and try and change some of the perceptions? I mean, obviously it's difficult to change someone's perception unless you can truly show them statistics or something, and obviously not everybody pays attention to that, but do you think that maybe with the reopening of the arcade, things will change?
Perception-wise, honestly, I don't know that it's the reopening of the arcade that's going to change the perception. I think if there is a perception that changes it, it's going to be some of the housing that's happening downtown, which if people actually live downtown, that they may feel okay, it's better, it's safer. You know, perceptions are really hard to change. I'm going to give you a political example, all right? No matter which side you are on this one, we have a president who has established perceptions about who he is and what he is and what he does. And he has a percentage of our country that is going to follow him and believe him no matter how much he lies. And that is perception. It's not truth. It's not fact. It's perception. So there's always going to be that percentage of people that are going to be like that. And whether it comes to Dayton, whether it comes to the arcade, whether it comes to different areas, you're always going to have that. You know, I can't tell you how many people I've had tell me over the years, I'm afraid to drive downtown. You know, I get lost going downtown. I don't know where to go. There's too many one-way streets. When really what they're telling me is that there are people of different color than I am. There are people of different age than I am, and I don't want to be down there with them. And that's sad. But it's also human, and hopefully you all, because we've tried unsuccessfully, but maybe you all will be able to change that someday.
What are some of the things that you would think, other than perhaps making people feel safe, that the new arcade or the reopening of the arcade could do to maybe bring some people back?
I think that, again, I'm talking about perception. I think the reopening of the arcade is going to make have a perception that the city of Dayton is thriving. You know, it just like the baseball stadium. I can remember back when we were talking about the baseball stadium, and all these naysayers were saying, "Oh, don't open the baseball stadium. It's going to bankrupt the city. It's going to be awful. It's going to be terrible." It started something which has already helped Dayton on a comeback trail. Because if you remember demographically, and my demographics may be wrong here, but we lost a population of almost 100,000 people from the city of Dayton when we lost a lot of manufacturing jobs and a lot of everything else. So we have to redevelop who we are as a city. That baseball stadium helped. You know, it as silly as it seems, watching a bunch of people hit a ball with a bat, you know, it really helped because it developed a perception. It helped the Oregon District. We now have people building houses and condominium units. We have different parts of the city which are now beginning to progress. And I think you add the arcade to that, and it's the icing on the cake. And it's really, really going to help, I think, develop that whole area, because people are going to want to be part of that progress.
So then I guess you kind of answered this, but finally, do you think the reopening of the arcade will ultimately be successful?
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Lieberman.
There you go.
There you go.